This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Nora Flaherty. After the news this evening, we'll have an update on the manhunt for a northern Maine man who shot five people overnight. Anthony Lord is now in police custody. And Governor Paula Page asked the Maine Supreme Court to weigh in on the vetoed bills question. Those stories and more in a moment. First News. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. A government watchdog committee learned today that state investigators expect to file a final report this fall on Republican Governor Paula Page's alleged interactions with the Goodwill Hinckley School and the subsequent firing of Democratic House Speaker Mark Eaves as the school's president. A.J. Higgins has more.
The Office of Program Evaluation and Government Accountability investigators hope to learn whether LePage abused his power as governor by allegedly threatening to withhold funding to the school unless it fired Eaves, whom he said was not qualified to take the job. OPIG's Beth Ashcroft told lawmakers her investigators are preparing for the probe.
At this time, not needing the Government Oversight Committee's help in any way to get started with this, that would be my status report to you, and that is the kind of report you can expect from us as we move through this till we are ready to issue a final report, and I am shooting for a September release to you of the results of that review.
Ashcroft said thus far her agency has had good cooperation from the departments involved in the incident. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
A federal bankruptcy judge in Maine has given initial approval to plans to distribute $86 million U.S. dollars to families of victims of the Lac-Mégantic oil train disaster. The payout is part of a larger $330 million settlement to compensate those affected by the tragedy. 47 people were killed when the runaway oil train derailed in downtown Lac-Mégantic 2 years ago, causing a deadly explosion. Portland attorney Robert Keach is the federally appointed trustee for the former Montreal, Maine and Atlantic Railway, which operated the train.
It's a positive development. It gets us one step closer to making, distributions to people who deserve them and need to get them as fast as possible.
Keach says creditors of the defunct railroad operator will vote on the settlement by early September. If they approve, it'll go back to the judge for final confirmation on September 24th. In weather tonight, clouding up statewide with late night showers in the west and low temperatures in the mid-50s to low 60s north-south. Tomorrow, overcast and muggy with scattered showers in the afternoon and a chance of mountain thunder. Highs in the upper 60s north to the upper 70s south inland, 60s along the coast east of Portland. And on Sunday, showers and possible afternoon thunder in the north. Otherwise, some sun and some clouds with some afternoon thunder. This is MPBN. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. A manhunt that virtually shut down the northern Maine town of Lee today has ended as state police have taken 35-year-old Anthony Lord into custody. Police say Lord shot five people in three northern Maine communities overnight. He has a criminal record that includes convictions for domestic assault, criminal threatening, and assault. He's also on the state sex offender registry. Lord was arrested in Holton, and police say a woman being held with him is safe. Dozens of law enforcement officers had been searching for Lord, who's believed to have stolen a logging truck before the overnight shootings in the towns of Lee, Benedicta, and Silver Ridge. Jennifer Mitchell's in Lincoln, where police held a press conference this afternoon. Jennifer, as best as you've been able to figure out, what happened up there?
Well, it's a fairly twisted tale so far. It's one that appears to have started Thursday night, but police are naturally, they're still trying to put the pieces together. What they do know is that five people were shot, two of them fatally shot, and one person was beaten in what might best be described as something of a rampage. It seems to have started with a barn in Benedicta Township being set on fire around 8:30 Thursday evening. And at that same residence where the barn was burning, two individuals, a man and a woman, were found shot. The man later died of his injuries. The woman was taken to the hospital. But another woman who lived at that residence, 21-year-old Brittany Irish, is known to have left the residence with Lord. And from there, you can pretty much follow a trail of destruction, more shootings, a beating, the theft of a pulp truck, and then a massive manhunt that finally ends with Lord's apprehension in Holton. And it's interesting to note that this wasn't the only manhunt going on today. Resources from the ongoing manhunt in Parkman, where Robert Burton has been on the run since June 5th, some resources had to be diverted from that search to try and bring Lord under control today.
Any sense of what his motives might have been, the story behind this?
Well, at this point, police are not really speculating on what could have sparked off this rather extraordinary sequence of events. It's unknown if or how the victims were connected, if they knew each other or not. It is fairly clear that Brittany Irish and Lord at least did know one another, but whether she went with him willingly or not is unknown at this point. She is not under arrest at the present time, but Lord will continue to face police interrogation, and they will be searching for that motive, no doubt.
The people who were shot, we now know that at least two of them are dead. Do we know anything else, like who they are?
Well, at this point, not all next of kin have been notified, so names are being withheld at this point. We do know that there were six victims in all, five suffered the gunshot wounds, one a beating. Two of them, both men, have died of their injuries, and the rest were taken to hospitals for treatment, but no word on the condition of the survivors, and they expect to know more shortly after kin have been notified.
One thing that has come out about Anthony Lord that is that he's been investigated in the death of his six-month-old son in May. Is there any thought that this is in connection with that?
Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation on the fact that Lord has a criminal history. He's known to the police. He's on the state sex offender registry. And he is part of an ongoing investigation into the death of his own six-month-old son. But police are reluctant to say where he fits into that investigation, and they don't speculate on whether these latest incidents were at all related or not. For now, you know, what we know is that Lord is in custody. He'll face questions from the police. He will face arraignment soon, and he will likely face two counts of homicide, and police say other charges are likely to follow, and he's due to make his first court appearance in Arista County sometime at the beginning of the week.
All right, Jennifer Mitchell speaking with me from Lincoln. Thanks so much for calling in.
And thanks.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on MPBN. Still to come, ultramarathoner Scott Jurek might have set a new record for doing the Appalachian Trail, but not everyone's happy about how he celebrated. First, though, Governor Paul LePage has asked the Maine Supreme Court to decide whether he missed his deadline to veto dozens of bills, as the Maine legislator and the attorney general have said, or whether his own interpretation of the Constitution is correct. The governor says he took no action on the bills because he thought lawmakers had adjourned last month. Mal Leary has details.
At issue is Governor LePage's contention that when the legislature adjourned June 30th until a time to be determined by the Senate president and the House speaker, he lost the ability to deliver vetoes to the legislature since they were not in session and no time certain was set for when they would return.
The problem is, they did not give me the opportunity to return the vetoes. They left and they say we'll be back when the speaker and the president calls them back.
In an interview Friday, the governor went on to cite Article 4, Part 3, Section 2 of the Maine Constitution that governs vetoes. He says, in effect, the legislature ended its first regular session, and he says a different part of the Constitution allows him to veto bills after lawmakers have returned for 3 days.
That gives me 10 days plus it starts the 3-day wait once they get back. And that was the reason. And it's so clear in the Constitution. I don't understand why they're even questioning it. It's so obvious.
But the governor's interpretation is not shared by the legislature. House Speaker Mark Eaves, a Democrat from North Berwick, says when the legislature adjourned on June 30th, it relied on the same language that was used 4 years ago by the then-Republican-controlled legislature. Back then, LePage sent vetoes to the legislature within the 10 days and before lawmakers returned to session.
The bills have become law. It is extremely clear. The Constitution outlines it very clearly. So the physical bills we have given to the revisor's office because they are law.
Republican Senate President Mike Thibodeau agrees with Eaves. He says if the court rules for LePage, the legislature can consider the vetoes next January. Attorney General Janet Mills doubts that will happen. She says the governor is misreading the Constitution and ignoring decades of legal precedent in which the legislature has clearly established when a session has ended by using a specific motion known as sine die, a Latin phrase meaning without day.
A final adjournment is a final adjournment. And they're very specific about doing that for good reason, because that's when the 90 days starts, when people could start people's veto. The 90 days for determining when a law becomes a law after the final adjournment, not after a temporary or day-to-day adjournment.
The Maine Supreme Court will decide first if the questions sent by the governor meet the threshold for an advisory opinion, known as a solemn occasion. The court may ask for legal arguments on that question, or could simply decide on its own. If there is a solemn occasion, the court could schedule oral arguments on the issue. There's no time frame set in the Constitution on how long the justices can take to issue an opinion. In the past, they have given questions brought as a solemn occasion precedence over other matters and decided them in a matter of weeks. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
And finally today, when Scott Jurek made it to the top of Mount Katahdin, breaking the record for the fastest traverse of the entire Appalachian Trail, the ultramarathoner and his corporate sponsors wanted to celebrate. But what went on top of Maine's highest peak on Sunday did not sit well with people who oversee Baxter State Park. Jay Field has the story.
It was an undeniable feat of mental and physical prowess. Springer Mountain, Georgia, all the way to the summit of Mount Katahdin. The entire Appalachian Trail, all 2,180 miles of it, in just 46 days.
There was this mountain here. I had to get there. I had to be standing here.
By this point, as captured in this YouTube video, ultramarathoner Scott Jurek was sitting beneath the sign at the summit of Mount Katahdin, answering questions, surrounded by a crowd of family, friends, and camera-wielding media members, his right hand wrapped around a bottle of champagne. Jurek asked how long some in the crowd had been waiting for him at the summit, which also marks the official end of the Appalachian Trail. "I was here at 9, one man replied.
"Give that man a glass of champagne. I'll pour some right now.
Pour it out.
Yeah.
The officials who manage Baxter State Park, though, weren't too thrilled to see alcohol at the summit and a crowd of more than 12 people.
"I knew about this before the event. We've told them they've got to obey certain rules."
Doug Denico heads the Maine Forest Service and is chair of the Baxter State Park Authority, which oversees the park according to strict rules to keep it, quote, forever wild. In the days before Jurek's ascent, Denico says the park's director, Jensen Bissell, was in contact with some of the ultramarathoner's corporate sponsors.
"Jensen was perfectly clear on what was expected of them, and they agreed to do those things. You know, it had to do with how many cameras, how many people, and, you know, no drinking and all those things. Because, you know, what people expect when they go to the summit, they don't expect a party atmosphere. They expect kind of a semi-reverent type atmosphere."
But Jurek, in coordination with corporate sponsors like Cliff Bar and Brooks Running, staged a celebration. The ultramarathoner sprayed champagne into the air as the crowd cheered. The Park Authority offered its own take on what happened later on Facebook. It lamented the use of Baxter State Park as a setting for promoting products made by the companies backing Jurek. And it noted that the ultramarathoner and his sponsors failed to tell the media that he had been issued citations for consuming alcoholic beverages in the park, littering, and hiking with an oversized group. Neither Scott Jurek nor his wife have responded to emails seeking comment. Doug Denico, meantime, says this isn't the first time that people have staged such a celebration atop Mount Katahdin.
"The Park Service is going to send a couple of their people up to talk with us because they've been kind of ignoring this issue. It is their problem, and they should address it. It's not ours to address. It's theirs."
The National Park Service manages the Appalachian Trail, along with the U.S. Forest Service, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, and numerous state agencies. Emails and calls to the National Park Service and the Appalachian Trail Conservancy seeking comment were not returned by airtime. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
And at 13 minutes before 6, let's check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
Residents and visitors of Maine are about to roll up their sleeves, preparing to take on the first installment of the dog days of summer. Clouds will lower and thicken statewide tonight, showers west of the Penobscot by dawn. Mid-50s north, low 60s south. Tomorrow will be an overcast and muggy day with scattered showers most in the afternoon, as well as thunderstorms over the mountains. Upper 60s north, upper 70s south, 60s along the coast east of Portland. A warm front will lift through Maine Sunday. Showers and possible thunderstorms are likely over northern Maine. For the rest of the state, once the morning fog lifts, latest down east, count on varying amounts of hazy sunshine, very humid, with scattered afternoon thunderstorms. Low 70s north, upper 80s south. Monday, still sultry with showers and thunderstorms. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Jonathan Woodward, Ed Morin, Erwin Gratz, Tom Porter, and Barbara Caritti. I'm Nora Flaherty.